Welcome to the show, Wish Upon a Star. I'm your host, Andell Banks. Wish Upon a Star is an exciting program that showcases up-and-coming stars in the musical, visual, performing, creative, and literary arts arenas. We will discuss with professional guests about songwriting, entertainment law, literary careers, copywriting, and other topics of importance in these highly competitive industries. It gives us great pleasure to introduce our special guest this week, Sharon Robinson. Her biography. Sharon Robinson is currently a resident of Washington, D.C. She was raised in New Jersey, has lived in Boston and Los Angeles. She lived in Portland, Oregon for 22 years before moving to D.C. She has always loved art and pursued it throughout her life. Sharon is a scholar, watercolorist, muralist, and identifies her creative style as specializing in abstract painting, mixed media, mixed collage, and painting artists. She says she is primarily self-taught, but have taken classes and workshops, being exposed to the professional techniques and design concepts which structured the basis of her artworks. Sharon also studied and obtained a master's degree in urban design and community development to strengthen her interest in the man-made environment. After working 25 years in the urban transit and planning field, she felt the desire to continue her artistic pursuit. Hence, Sharon became a full-time artist in 1999. Her art career has channeled her into teaching and showing her artworks in galleries, exhibits in the Pacific Northwest, and in Washington, D.C. She also lends her time as a consultant in managing art programs and events for local government agencies, nonprofit arts organizations, and major West Coast art festivals, as well as working in a gallery. Sharon lives and maintains her art studio in Washington, D.C. Sharon, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
We're going to begin our discussion then by the ways, hows, and passion of art creation, how it can lead one to a world of wonder. Let's say if one has a passion for music, they might become a singer or play an instrument or even become an art historian. In your passion for painting, what is your personal philosophy regarding art?
Well, I look at any form of art as essentially a creative exercise. And I believe creativity, in its broadest sense, is really very important to living our daily lives. I think everyone has a degree of creativity. They may not associate it with something formal like art or music or writing, but I think each person has within themselves the ability to think creatively, to apply creative energy, to problem solving, just a lot of things that, you know, we may not normally think of as being art. So for me, you know, living a creative life and helping others to do so is a prime reason that I am engaged in the arts.
Oh, that's great. I know a lot of people can identify with that when they have people who are their mentors. Some artists I have spoken with said that they chose their artistic path when they found a niche that fit right in with their creative style. How do you feel yourself fulfilling your philosophy?
Well, speaking of niches, about 12 years ago, I started teaching some classes in abstract mixed media. And it was mainly because I was just having such a wonderful time and felt so invigorated by the work that I was doing, the things that I had learned, that I really wanted to share it with other people. So when I started teaching, it was really on a, you know, fairly limited basis, but it ended up being something that I've done continuously for the last 13 years, and the more I've done it, the more I've enjoyed it. So that, for me, has become a niche that helps me to fulfill my own creative ideals, because I get such enjoyment out of seeing people create things when they don't think they can or don't have the skills or not sure how to go about it. All these things that, for probably most of us, limit us in what we do in our daily lives. So this little area of teaching, you know, has become something that's been very important to me.
Oh, okay.
As far as my art, I was just going to say, as far as my own personal art, I discovered abstract art a long time ago, and long before I was actually doing it, I was curious about it because I could not quite understand some of the design concepts behind it. So when I applied myself to taking classes and workshops and really trying to understand it and discovering some of the approaches that were used by the artists that I was learning from, you know, it became much clearer to me. And I found that the abstraction has so many varied ways of approaching it. And to me, it's very liberating. Even though I was doing a lot of realistic work, particularly with mural work, which I still enjoy, there's really no limits. So, you know, I feel that it is such a broad range that I can incorporate just about any kind of style or theme or any other element that I think is relevant.
Oh, okay. Well, following that same train of thought, many artists may use exploration, cultural diversity, and education to create artworks that express their personal thoughts, feelings, I think, and emotions in their artistic journey. How has your art journey really evolved?
Well, as you mentioned, I started applying myself to being a full-time artist in about 1999. And prior to that, I had a really good art teacher in high school. I learned how to paint with watercolors and a number of other things. And over the years, particularly the time that I was working for transit agencies, I really didn't have a lot of time to devote to art. But I did make a point of trying to get out and seeing shows and visiting galleries and wherever I could get just a little shot in the arm, so to speak. And then when I finally had some time, I started taking watercolor classes. And, you know, that's how I really started with the watercolor, because that's what I had known previously in high school. So that's what I naturally gravitated towards. And as I mentioned, from there, it was kind of a departure into the abstract forms.
Oh, okay. Great. That shot in the arm really does stimulate you.
Yes, it does.
As a five-year-old, in my personal experience, I picked up the pencil, started doodling, showed my parents, and they said it was beautiful. I smiled, and the rest is history. What is your beginning spark and background in?
For me, I think it was maybe being, I'm going to say somewhere around 8, 9, 10 years old. And I used to love fashion, and I always wanted to be a fashion designer. My mother was a very good seamstress. She always dressed really well, and that's the first thing I ever remember really wanting to be. And that's when I started drawing, and I used to sew with my mother. She taught me how to sew, and I would make little things for my dolls and whatnot. So that was really the beginning for me.
I know I can identify with that because I had the same thing. You remember the little paper dolls and you make the clothes and you press the clothes on the dog. I used to do the same thing. We also know, Sharon, that artists are great observers, finding subjects and themes in just about everything. Using that proverbial third eye, what inspires you and what are some of the methods used in the type of work you do?
Well, what inspires me most is trying to identify the things that are common amongst people. In other words, there are things that link us together.
Okay.
Whether you think about it on a genetic level or a cultural level or a social level, and even more so now that we have connectivity, you know, across the world, basically, you know, and we're able to communicate with people virtually anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's become even more prevalent that we have these cross-cultural influences. But at the same time, we have things that keep us from connecting with people on a personal level. So by that I mean, you know, prejudices, pre-existing ideas about people, those sorts of things. And one of the most consistent themes in my work is this idea of cultural integration and the fact that if you really look at society, and let's just talk about society here in this country, we really are a melting pot. We really are this combination of things. And I think that's true really anywhere, because if you go far enough back in history, there's always been migration, there's always been intermixing, there's always been some sort of transition amongst peoples. So I'm personally very interested in history. I think understanding history helps you to understand who you are, where you are in the world, what your place is, and how you can relate effectively to other people. So I think there's these commonalities, and trying to uncover those and express those in some sort of visual way is a lot of what I try to do.
Right. I've seen some of your work, and of course it's being transmitted. Notable artists through the ages, as you will know too, are usually identified by their unique subjects, their style of art, a reoccurring theme, or brushstrokes, such as Degas and his favorite subject of the ballet, Norman Rockwell's everyday life subjects. What do you feel is unique about your artwork?
Well, probably the most I don't know if it's exactly unique, but the most distinctive thing about my artwork is use of color. I really like color, and most of my things are pretty vibrant. You know, I find that, you know, color really uplifts your spirit. And, you know, to me, anytime you see something really bright, it has sometimes more of a subtle effect, sometimes more of a direct effect. So I think color is one of the things that people comment most about on my work. The other is the use of a lot of the motifs and symbols, as I referred to earlier, from different cultural types of sources. So I like a lot of pattern, you know, things that suggest communication, you know, in different languages. And I have pieces that are centered around some of those more specific themes. For instance, I've been working on a series that is called Lost in Translation, which incorporates a number of materials that are words in different languages, things like Braille, and so forth. So I think the color and the use of the patterns and the cultural motifs are probably two of my most distinctive features.
Oh, that's interesting. At this point, we're going to do this every once in a while. Tell everybody what your arts site, what your website is. Maybe they can listen to the show and then look on there and listen and also see your paintings. What is your website?
My website is www.therobinsonstudio.com.
Okay. All right. Again, a task like administrative bookkeeping, Sharon, of your art career is essential. Oh, I dread it, but because it's not a favorable activity. But an outside activity, let's say to work on the scenery for a theater project or create a mural of a historical event, is usually most welcomed. What other kinds of art-related activities have you been involved in over the years? And you can elaborate on this if you wish.
Okay. Well, probably one of the biggest projects I worked on probably about 10 years ago now was as the art manager for an art program associated with the construction of a new civic center. And this was in a small town, a suburb of Portland, Oregon. And I had known the director of the project previously through my work in the transit agency, and ran into him one day, and he was telling me about this big new project they were getting ready to undertake, building a whole new city hall, essentially, and would I come on and be the manager for the art program. So it was similar to a percent for the art type of situation, although a percent for the art is usually a mandated requirement, either federal or state. In some places it kind of varies. But he was doing this more on a voluntary basis because he really wanted to make sure that somehow both the internal structure and the external structure of this building reflected artistic elements. So what we ended up doing was pulling together a committee which included the developer of the project, the architect, and a couple of community representatives, and came up with some concepts that were appropriate for each part of this facility. So for instance, on the outside, there was a large plaza area with gradually rising steps that were intended to be something like an amphitheater that could be used when the weather was nice for outdoor concerts and that sort of thing. So we came up with an idea for incorporating these big chunks of granite that had carvings in them that were scattered around the plaza. So they would be places where people could sit. They would be these really interesting basalt features. And the artist that did the carvings in them was a Native American artist, a woman who's quite well known in the Pacific Northwest. In fact, she has work in the National Indian Art Museum here in Washington, D.C. as well. So she did carvings of petroglyphs, these ancient petroglyph symbols from the Columbia River Basin, and that's what she carved on these basalt columns. We also had another artist who did this incredible glass banister up the main stairway, and I worked really directly with him in his glass studio to come up with a design and fuse the glass and those sorts of things. Then we had some suspended sculptures that were hanging in the lobby, and also some other outdoor sculptures, metal sculptures that replicated the fir trees that are so prominent in the Pacific Northwest. But one of my most favorite parts of that project was I worked with a specific artist on coming up with patterns for games that kids could play that were actually embedded in the plaza area. So there was a smaller area, a little more intimate outdoor space with benches and whatnot, where kids could come and there would be something like, say, a hopscotch pattern. We came up with several patterns that were games that could be played, more than one game played on one board, more or less. And so those were embedded in glass in the pavement. And then we had metal etched metal plaques with instructions for anyone who might come on how to play certain games in that particular area. So that was really such a wonderful project because not only did I get to collaborate with some phenomenal artists, but I was utilizing many of the organizational skills that I had developed in my years in the transit agencies as well. I also got to do a 30-foot mural for their new police station that kind of reflected, you know, 150 years of history of that particular area. So I really got a chance to flex my artistic muscles in so many ways, and it was just a wonderful experience. And then after that, I did some work for an organization called Indian Art Northwest. We organized a major arts festival that included Indian artists from the Pacific Northwest and the Southwest. So we had, again, phenomenal artists doing all kinds of amazing work at this big outdoor festival. And I think we attracted about 10,000 people to the festival.
Wow.
Very successful. Yeah, it was co-sponsored with the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. So, again, you know, I was able to learn more about the art world, be introduced to more amazing artists, and I also worked for a major West Coast festival, one of the longest-running festivals on the West Coast, actually, and I was a curator for their Fine Arts and Crafts Fair. So there were 120 artists who had tents in one part of this festival, and I coordinate all the work for that, the staging, for music, and all kinds of related tasks. So those were the major activities, you know, over the span of about 10 years. They were a little more on the organizing and consulting side.
Sounds very interesting, and definitely, like you said, we're very evolving in your own career. We're going to take a break, Sharon, and we will be right back. Welcome back. This is Ann Dale Banks, your host on Wish Upon a Star. And you are listening on station www.bbsradio.com, station 2. We wish and hope that you will give us your comments and suggestions. You can do this by sending an email to musicradio34@gmail.com. Again, please send us your comments and suggestions in an email to musicradio34@gmail.com. We want to say thank you again for listening. Our guest today is Sharon Robinson, and we will continue our most informative discussion with Sharon. Sharon, there is a German proverb that loosely states, "He who teaches can learn just as much as the student." It is always, I think, a rewarding experience to give guidance to those interested in the art arena. How has teaching influenced your work?
Teaching for me has been an exercise in stretching. And you have to stretch to, first of all, accommodate everyone and make them feel at home.
Okay.
And that's the way I like to approach my classes. So in any given situation, you'll have people who come with different levels of ability, different levels of experience, different ideas, and teaching makes you stop and consider each person individually. So one of the things that I like to do in the beginning of the class is just go around the room, get an idea of why people are there. And that helps me then to organize my class presentations, you know, to know what kind of additional materials I might want to bring, you know, that'll address someone's specific question, that sort of thing. So that I would say would be the first thing. And then secondly, what I found is that each person brings their own viewpoint. They have their own ideas. I've had a lot of students, for instance, who had backgrounds in quilting or working with fabric. And, you know, so they have a little bit different kind of artistic background, their approach to doing their art form might be a little bit different. But it creates the possibility of doing something different for me as well, because I see how they work. And, you know, I try to uncover, you know, some technique or some material or some other aspect of it that I could also incorporate. So it's very much of a give and take. And I have seen so many people who thought they couldn't really do art because their idea of art was drawing something that looked like something, or, you know, they felt, you know, this kind of feeling that probably a lot of us have had growing up where you never did it quite right, or, you know, some kind of negative association with not being able to perform quite at a certain level. And that's one of the things that I really like about abstract art, because you're not trying to make something look like something, but at the same time, you're able to infuse, you know, your own personal viewpoint, and you can incorporate so many different kinds of things to kind of get across the message that you want to convey. So really, this, you know, very much of a give and take. You know, I've seen people come up with some great ideas for things, and I'm wondering myself, why didn't I ever think of that? So that give and take is just really the best as far as I'm concerned.
That's great. And like you said, when you're teaching, you always find out other little things that other people think of. And secondly, the gravitation to abstract may take a little while for some people, because like you said, when you grow up, that's an apple, so you want to paint or draw that paint an apple that looks just like an apple.
Right.
Through various periods in time, artists develop expressionism, realism, abstraction, romanticism, surrealism, avant-garde, impressionism, and pointillism, just to name a few. What artists have influenced you most?
Well, I remember years ago, and I can't remember how many years, but many, seeing a piece by Romare Bearden. And Romare Bearden was one of the premier abstract collage artists. And, you know, that really, even though I wasn't doing abstract work at the time, it stayed with me, and it stayed with me for years.
Oh.
So he's certainly one. And, you know, artists like Jacob Lawrence, Robert Motherwell, Kandinsky, Louis Malu Jones. I have tried really hard to expose myself to many artists. Because I don't have an art history background, I never studied art formally. So, you know, for me, it's been, you know, reading, you know, going to art galleries, going to exhibitions, you know, talking to other artists. You know, every now and then I'll just go online and I'll look at different artists' work just to really, you know, try to absorb a little bit more about what their style was. And, you know, I go buy videos and DVDs and watch those as well. But even artists that don't do their work in the same style that I do, you know, for instance, you know, more realistic artists, you know, I can really appreciate, I love the Impressionists. In fact, not too long ago, I went to the Degas-Cassatt exhibit that's currently at the National Art Museum, and it's just a phenomenal exhibit. And, you know, I think there's so much to be learned from really any kind of art form, and that's one of the things that I try to get across to my students is that, you know, if you really want to understand art, you know, you have to be out there, you have to be looking at it, you have to look at it with certain kinds of things in mind, you know, try to deconstruct and see if you can see shapes, if you can see form, if you can see patterns and movement and those sorts of things that really help you to get a better grip on, you know, what you might want to do in your own work. So I try to be as inclusive as possible, but, you know, I'm particularly attracted to, you know, those abstract artists that I mentioned.
Oh, right. And I've seen most of the artists that you've named. I've seen their exhibit, Romare Bearden, Jacob Lawrence, and Degas. And I am in agreement with you that their work is just, it's impressionist, but still it has that definite vision that just attracts you. And I love their work, especially Degas with the ballet. Every piece of art, including sculpture, seems to communicate a feeling, Sharon, a message, and challenges the viewer to make up their own story of interpretation as to what the artist was thinking when creating a particular artwork. What types of subject matter or themes do you address in your art?
Well, as I mentioned before, generally I address themes of cultural integration. And by that I mean, you know, again, the idea that, you know, we all have ways that we communicate information, that we store information in our collective memory. So, for instance, I have a series that I've called The Guardians, and it is really based on, for the most part, African symbols regarding cultural values, I guess is probably a good way to put it. So, you know, I've used Andinkra symbols. I've used patterns that are from African masks and drums and other kinds of artistic expression in those particular cultures. You know, as I said before as well, I have a series that I started on called Lost in Translation, you know, dealing specifically with how do we communicate with each other. I did a piece previously that's now in a private collection called Deciphering the Code, which is also along those lines. So, you know, I try to look at these different elements of this idea of cultural integration and cultural cross-migration and whatnot, and, you know, see how I can express that visually. Right now, I have five pieces that are hanging in a show in the Museum of Science and Industry in Portland, Oregon, and they're part of a show called Mind to Hand, and it's about art and science. And my series is entitled Mitochondrial DNA. So, again, you know, I've been interested in this idea, and it was really prompted by a show that I saw a few years ago on the Human Genome Project, and it traced the DNA of a randomly selected group of people from around the world and came up with an analysis that showed that there was really a very small gene pool amongst the whole human population, you know, which to me says that we really are all related. I mean, we kind of say it, you know, anecdotally, but that was more of the scientific evidence that that really is the case. So that made me start thinking about, you know, this idea of 6 degrees of separation, you know, how far back can we go to trace a lineage of any particular type? And for this particular show, since it was the mind and art, you know, because I'd been working on this series, you know, I sort of honed my viewpoint of that, did some research on what the visual representation of this DNA analysis has been, and then took some of that and incorporated it along with some of the materials and things that I normally use into this series on mitochondrial DNA.
Oh, that sounds interesting. For those of you who are listening, if you want to, we're going to get ready to take another break. You can go to her website and look at therobinsonstudio.com, and we'll be right back. And we're back. This is Andel Banks, your host of Wish Upon a Star. Thank you so much for listening. We would love to have your comments and suggestions. Please send them in an email to musicradio34@gmail.com. You're listening to Wish Upon a Star on site bbsradio.com, station 2. Our guest this week is Sharon Robinson. Sharon, to continue our discussion, I gave your website to the listeners so they can look at your website and your paintings. In your paintings, the passion for your subjects and themes is superbly transmitted in your artworks. Why are these important to you?
Well, I think that if you talk to any artist, they feel that their job is to make people think and to somehow convey information to elicit some emotional response, you know, something that helps you to connect with the world. And I would say that, you know, my intent is exactly the same. You know, I think it's important to do work that, to me, is uplifting, is quite important. You know, so my work is not sad, it's not depressing, it's not violent. You know, I think we have enough of that going on. So, you know, while I want people to think, I want it to be from the standpoint of, you know, what can you draw from it that's positive and will make you think maybe a little bit differently about a particular subject. So, you know, this idea, and I think it's really hard for, I'm not a performing artist, so I can't really speak to that, but, you know, I think in the visual arts, people think of visual art as being something you just look at, it's just kind of there on the wall. But one of the things I like about abstraction and collage with the process of layering is that you have nuances of things, and I think that's what life is. You know, so much of life is nuance. You know, it's really the gray areas. You know, most things aren't black and white. It's more gray. So being able to uncover and discover and take that information in is really an important idea to me.
I'm in total agreement with you. As artists, I think that's our responsibility. I had spoken to another artist on the program, and he said the same thing. That is our responsibility, to show the world, to have a response of positivity, happiness, and colorfulness. And you do that in your artwork.
Well,
another
you.
Factor in the art world is being aware of the new art trends. Some or most of them are relative to technology, and others of out-of-the-box creations in salt, rubber tires, dumpster dive found objects, vacuum cleaners, and basketballs. What do you see as trends in the art world today?
I would say that certainly recycled art is a trend. I think the idea of preservation of the environment, you know, as being something that's extremely important at this particular time. You know, artists using platforms to get their art out that are a little bit different than perhaps they have been in the past. So, for instance, there's an amazing, amazing movement really around the world of sometimes it's called outsider art, or you know, it might include graffiti artists and younger artists who use buildings as their canvases, sidewalks, unused spaces, you know, places that people are out in the world but may not be looking for art. So some of it is, you know, like these surprises. You come around a corner and you'll find some little figure that's painted on the side of a wall. And, you know, things may be there temporarily. They may be there for 6 months or a year, or they may go away within 24 hours. But, you know, I think that's a pretty substantial movement, and it's happening in so many places around the world. And I also think that there's always room for artists to collaborate, you know, so collaboration amongst visual and performing arts, you know, whether it's spoken word or music, you know, these art events where, you know, someone might be reciting some poetry and an artist will be painting a picture. In fact, the show that I was in a couple of years ago in Seattle, I wasn't able to attend the event, but I had a few pieces of work, and one of the events associated with the exhibition was to have some poets come in, and a woman recited a poem based on a piece of my artwork that was hanging in that show. Yeah, so, you know, I think that's really an exciting thing, you know, because we don't have to think of ourselves as being in different fields, you know, even though technically it might be. But, you know, there's so many ways that an audience can have a very full creative experience, you know, through collaboration.
I think I'm going to have to put that on my cheat sheet. Because I love that concept of poetry and art. I love that. I might have to borrow that. As you have become fluent and an accomplished artist who has found her own spot in the art arena, if you could change anything about your art career, what would it be?
Well, I don't think I would change any of the things that I have done. I would probably just add to it. You know, again, because I didn't go to art school, sometimes I feel that I could benefit greatly from, you know, having a little bit more formal training, you know, just to give myself a little more of a structure and underpinning, you know, to be able to talk a little more in a more educated fashion about other artists and, you know, really knowing who those artists are and their work. So I try to expose myself to as much of that as possible, but, you know, I think that would be it, you know, just to really get a little bit more formal training, because it really is a second career, and, you know, oftentimes when you do embark on a second career, you have to get some training. You know, you make that shift, you know, and recreate yourself. You need some sort of a basis. So hopefully I'll be able to do that in the not-too-distant future.
Right, I know. But even when I did some of my research after formal training, some of the accomplished artists say, well, you don't want too much formal training because it may take away from your own idea of creativity. So I guess that's six on one hand, half a dozen on the other.
Yeah.
At an art exhibit,
everything requires balance.
Yeah, right. You just have to find that, you know, that balance there. Most of the times when I have an art exhibit, viewers are fascinated by the titles of the exhibit and the titles of the paintings, wanting some time for you to explain the meaning of the painting title. In your exhibits and paintings, what are some of the titles and their meaning?
Well, I mentioned Lost in Translation. That's pretty straightforward. I have also a piece called Tell Me Your Dream. And quite honestly, I probably will never sell it because it's a little more personal. But it was a piece of sheet music that I found with that title on it. And it just kind of fit, you know, where I was at that particular time. And that became the title of the piece. Sometimes things will just occur to me as I'm working on them. You know, I have a fairly new piece that I did. It's a rather large canvas. It's actually just painted. There's no collage in it. But it's called Convergence, and it's really, you know, a very kind of uniform, almost space-looking kind of background with ribbons of color. And, you know, it was this idea of coming together, you know, things come together at points in time. And, you know, sometimes I have, you know, more playful titles of things. I've been doing some miniature pieces lately, and one of them, you know, I ended up doing with sort of these little kind of block shapes in it, and I just called it Lean on Me because they were all kind of leaning in one particular direction. So it really, sometimes it has specifically to do with the nature of the series that I'm working on, but other times it's maybe some particular piece of paper or something that, you know, has a word or something that suggests an idea. One of my pieces in the mitochondrial DNA series that I was referring to is called Swimming in the Gene Pool, you know, which, you know, just sort of a play on this idea of the fact that, you know, we have a gene pool that we are a part of, and basically we're all swimming in that gene pool, you know, and as we go about our lives and marry and have children, you know, we make this pond larger, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay, I know when I went on your site, I saw one or two titles that sort of interest me along with the painting, Thus I Heard.
Yeah, that is from some Buddhist scripture. You know, it starts out with this phrase, Thus I Heard, which was sort of a prelude to a preaching. And, you know, it was kind of this idea that you have something to convey, that you have an idea, that you're trying to communicate some information. And, you know, this is sort of like, listen up, you know, this is what I'm trying to get across. So that's where that came from.
Oh, I see. That sort of caught my eye. To continue, in the past years, the art industry has taken a back seat in the economy. Matter of fact, most of the arts have. Can you give our listeners some tips in developing their art career in these trying times?
Well, I think, like just about anything else, persistence and dedication are paramount. I don't think anyone's art career unfolds very quickly. You know, a few people have in times gone by, but, you know, I think just about any artist has to expose themselves as much as possible to what's going on in the art world. I think a key is understanding what you are about as an artist and what the most appropriate venue or platform is for you to expose the world to your art. So a few minutes ago I was mentioning, you know, the outsider art or the graffiti art. You know, that's, you know, very much of a public platform. You know, whereas, you know, some artists are more focused, say, on gallery work, or, you know, there's many other venues now since so many galleries have closed. Many people are looking towards, you know, things like pop-up galleries or art festivals, you know, opportunities to show work that may not be in a traditional gallery setting, but you do have an audience. You know, and, you know, if you do festivals and fairs, for instance, I used to know a lot of artists who made their living, you know, for 6-8 months out of the year doing nothing but going from one festival to the other, you know, driving up and down the coast or whatever it happens to be. And if you have sculpture and, you know, other types of work that, you know, may lend itself to being in sort of this open-air environment, you know, that's a good way to go as well. So that's why I say there's, you know, many different ways of doing it. You know, some of it is stylistically related. You know, if you want to do gallery work, you need to find a gallery that has the type of work that you are interested in showing or shows the type of work that you do. You have to have a good fit. And all of this takes time, energy, resources, you know, to research. But, you know, I think going about it in, you know, a very organized way will help get you to, you know, a much better point sooner than, you know, say doing a shotgun approach and just, you know, sort of throwing your stuff out there wherever. So, you know, again, nowadays there's so many opportunities online. There are many, many websites you can go to get information on what places have calls for artists out, and you don't have to be in that particular locale. You know, I submit things online to galleries in California and various places. So, you know, certainly the electronic media has made it a lot easier in some regards, you know, to be involved in the art field. And but again, you have to do your research and make sure that, you know, what you're going for, again, is suited to your work and vice versa.
Exactly. So, again, you just got to persevere and don't give up. We're going to take another short break to get a glass of water, and we'll be right back. And we're back. This is Andale Banks, your host on Wish Upon a Star. Thank you so much for listening. And you're listening on BBSRadio.com, Station 2. We would love to hear your comments and suggestions. Please send an email to musicradio34@gmail.com. Again, for your comments and suggestions, please send an email to musicradio34@gmail.com. Our special guest this week is Sharon Robinson. Now, Sharon, before we leave you, I've enjoyed the conversation. Can you please share your contact information with our listeners?
Yes, my website is www.therobinsonstudio.com. And through that site, you'll be able to reach me via email as well.
All right. In the few seconds or minutes that we have left, can you tell us your artist statement? I thought that was very informative and intriguing. If you have it with you.
I could get that really quickly here. But in the meantime, what I would say, and I'll just read you the quote that's on my website, because I, you know, I think this really expresses most closely what I feel about art. And it says, "Art, in whatever form it takes, be it visual, performance, literary, culinary, or musical, feeds our humanity and provides a means of connecting to others. As an artist, I enjoy both the creative process and the endless opportunities to meet new people and share common ground. I believe there is art in everyone's life. It has only to be discovered and developed." And that pretty much states most of what's in my artist statement as well.
All right. Thank you very much. Again, Sharon, we want to say thank you so much for joining us today on Wish Upon a Star, and we certainly will continue to contact you and see if we can have you for a guest at another time. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Sharon Robinson on Wish Upon a Star, station BBSRadio.com. Thank you, Sharon.
Appreciate it. Enjoyed it very much.
Wish Upon a Star. For comments and suggestions, you just send an email to musicradio34@gmail.com. Again, this is Andale Banks, your host, and Denise Banks, our coordinator, saying, keep reaching for the stars. Thank you so much for listening.